Hello, everybody.
Hey.
And welcome to The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio. This is Nicholas Miller reporting in with my co-host, Steve Cato.
Hey there.
Why don't you say hello to everyone here, Steve Cato?
Hi.
Yes. You know, the summertime is nice. I have to agree. Well, our guest tonight comes from a different time zone.
Central European.
So he showed up a little bit early, and he was hanging out here at K-Chung Studios. And unfortunately, our front desk person was not very receptive to him. He's a difficult person, but I mean, we're going to have to talk to them about that.
Basically, Lorna flipped out. Or rather, he really freaked Lorna out, and then Lorna just like lost it. It was a rough scene, apparently.
So he gave me a call on my cell phone, and I had to bike over here really fast, which is always dangerous in Los Angeles, but thankfully nothing happened. And over a cappuccino, we talked a little bit about what he's going to do here tonight. And as far as I can understand, it was a little obscure, but I did glean this. He is going to talk about the artist's life.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not like anyone in Chinatown would have any idea what that's like, would they now?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, the artist has always lived a very strange life in comparison to most other people. And he's going to tell us a little bit about that. Well,
oh shit.
What was that, Steve?
Your dog just peed on my shoe, dude.
Okay. Right, yeah, I'll sorry about that. Well, without further ado, here we have on K-Chung Radio, The Talking Show, George Kerkhoven.
In Amsterdam, a student, and then I heard about Alter Mull because he was giving a performance in Galerie the Apple, and I was then presented by somebody a book about the commune, and I saw naked people and very lively children, and they made a lot of art, and you had the impression you could do what you liked there, finally in this so-called suppressive society. And I thought, yes, this is, well, I'm going to drop out. So I went for a vacation, a holiday to Vienna, and I spent about two weeks there. And I thought, oh, I have to do that also. It was very, I mean, everybody was bald-headed, so, about also the women. And especially the women were very, yeah, I mean, you know, very loose. They didn't look like normal women. I mean, they didn't have makeup or long or white whatever hair. No, and with so garden trousers, you know, those striped ones. Everybody looked about in that respect the same, but the women were very dominant, but in a good way. I mean, they still liked the men. And
of course, I was very impressed by the free sexuality, because nobody had an exclusive couple relationship. And also, Alter Mull had developed a sort of self-expression. We called it Selbstdarstellung, SD. And that was the group always used to come in at night, say about 8 o'clock at night, together. And there were a lot of, well, maybe at that time, about 200 people. And there was left over a middle in between, and you stepped into the middle and you expressed yourself. But
so people formed a circle, you can
say. Yeah. Yes, and you could really express yourself like you wanted. I mean, and that was of course influenced by Alter Mull's Wiener Aktionismus from the 60s, because you could scream, you could become a pig, or you could express your perversities about sexuality. You could kill your mother as an expression, and there were also kinds of elements of therapy. So suddenly I found myself sucking the tits of a woman, because I had become a baby. And you really felt, well, you could do what you liked and express. Anyway, so I went back to Holland, absolutely hypnotized by this group. And I thought, I want to fuck everybody. I mean, so I went to the pubs and, do you like to build a group with free sexuality? I asked them, do you like to fuck? And because I didn't realize anymore, most of the women couldn't stand such a question. But after a while, we formed also in Holland a group in a student's house. We had a sort of had three rooms on the floor of 14, and we started to express ourselves also with this kind of therapy and expression. And after, well, yeah, I just read an article about from people who wrote an article about this. They must have had the expression that we were in a madhouse. Yeah. But we thought it was normal. Anyway, in about 4 months, we had a group of 20 people. And every weekend, we gave a sort of a weekend for guests. And they also could express themselves. You know, normally, you also went a lot of times to your birth, or to the womb even, and you had a sort of a birth experience again. And because our theory was you could heal yourself if you did that, mm-hmm. and grow up again like you should, like a real normal child with love, and you could express your sexuality and everything. Anyway, we were sort of hippies, and we were all getting money from the social security system here in Holland, and we went to Nijmegen because Amsterdam was too small, and we sort of possessed a nuclear family house, very small. And we lived there with 20 people, and if you can imagine, with walls that thin, maybe 1 centimeter, and we all fucked the whole day through. And I mean, I don't understand that these people could stand it, but you know, sometimes they came with hammers and what do you say? Stop it, and so we can't stand it anymore.
The neighbors, you mean?
Yeah, the neighbors, but most of the time they were quite quiet. I mean, anyway, so, and after a while we bought a house in Nijmegen.
It's a city in the south of Holland.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and there we built in a small room a huge bed with, you know, floor. So, and well, with 20 people, at night, we fucked together, and also the neighbors didn't tell anything. It was very amazing. Maybe they went themselves, became themselves very horny. I don't know. Because I mean, you would expect this bed was screwed into the wall, and so the whole bed went in the same rhythm, and we came the orgasms of all the 20 came at the same moment. So it was a very wild time at those times. But after a while we said, okay, we have to become more what you can call more real. So we went all to our former jobs. For instance, I was had done my study, sort of a social scientist where I am. So I started a job as a teacher, so to the outside we became very normal, but for us it was an absolutely a role play, because maybe it was like Don Juan in these books of Carlos Castaneda, that he suddenly after a while he was in a nice suit. You know, right. Something like that. For us, we were still mad. We had free sexuality. We had common property. We painted like mad. You know, like action painting and all on the body and everything. And we were very wild and mad. But in the outside world, we were suddenly very normal. Now this group, we were connected with Otto Mühl all the time because we went on holiday. So every maybe 3 or 4 months to Vienna, Friedrichshof. That's a little bit outside Vienna, actually.
So what is a big house?
No, it was a sort of big property. Formerly it was a farm, but what was left over was one school. And so we built there many houses, and we bought more and more property after we had... become, again, teachers and things like that. So we earned a little bit of money. And this idea of having this kind of commune spread around Europe very fast. Oh. Yes. Like, certainly, I think in 1980 and 81, there were about 35 groups in France, about 5 or 6 in England, in London, in Scandinavian countries, in Germany, maybe 10 groups, Berlin, Munich, Hamburg, Bremen, Dusseldorf, in Switzerland, in Spain, and of course in Vienna itself, so in Austria, and in Holland. After a while, we moved to Amsterdam again. So we went then sometimes on holidays, and all the groups came together. I think in the maximum there were about 650 grown-ups, adults. And so that was always a big party. We have these self-expression nights. And Otto Mühl was always the very, the leader, very dominant man. And so, but he invented every month maybe a new way how to express yourself. So sometimes he used video. So we saw the screen more like the canvas for a painting. But then the face was the brush, so to speak. So he painted the face or yourself with all kinds of material like eggs and well, normal colors and clay and we used a lot of audio tapes with music, or we undressed ourselves and we had water therapy. So it was a game with cold, very cold and very hot water. So we poured that around us, on us, on the body. And for instance, the game was not to scream or just to scream. And so it was, you know, we were so free in how to express ourselves. It was funny, really. And I was always, I mean, if I was there 2 weeks maybe with all those people, it was like a shower or a bath, and you came back then to Amsterdam, and always you really get the impression, what is this kind of world? I mean, looking at the windows, what kinds of, how many impressions you get from this world? And because our world was so simple, so very simple, and only to enjoy ourselves. And, we had also one way to get more people in our groups by having theaters in every city where we had a group. Like here in Amsterdam, we had Volsap. It was a sort of avant-garde theater, and you could also do theater courses, of course, in our way. So we had this material expression, Materialaktion in German. It was you was naked, yeah, you painted yourself, and with a sort of very soft, warm, nice clay, so you could become statues, for instance, and all kinds of funny games that you suddenly the statues became alive, and we had tomato juice in our mouth, so we became vampires, and I mean, so many things to tell about. But we did it with normal people from Amsterdam, and they enjoyed it, and sometimes, of course, they walked away or run away because it was too heavy. And but for us it was also a way to get more people, because we always liked to get larger. But after a while we said no, because of sexual diseases, we closed now the group, and we
this was
about in 82-83, I think. And we closed suddenly the theater, although we had a lot of success. I mean, it's a small theater in Amsterdam, but many people came. We had these parties, these theater parties. So we didn't want to do normal theater anymore, but we had we gave a party. So, but everybody of our group, we were playing roles. So somebody was a prostitute. But not a... it could be possible that she just happened to be there, a sort of sexy woman. Or mm-hmm. I was often a punk, you know, mm-hmm. so I had some jelly in my hair and I leather jackets and all kinds of roles. Very ordinary and very bourgeois.
Mm-hmm.
So, because we played this role, no guest felt this is normal party. So they also started to play roles, and they had to react, of course, because
kind of invisible theater. You
can yes, say. Yeah, yes. Yeah, yeah. So we had a lot of fun, very much. And sometimes we gave also real, what you can call real theater on the stage. I remember one with Antoine. We had a discussion with the yelling about the G-spot and the clitoris.
Yeah.
I was for the clitoris to get a woman so far that she had an orgasm, and he, no, I just discovered the G-spot. Things, the very extreme themes and the way we did it. Anyway, but suddenly we stopped this theater, we closed it, and well, it happened to be me, but I suddenly had the idea, maybe you could earn some money or make some money in the as a broker. So
stockbroker,
yeah, and futures, commodities. And so I went to one of the American stockbroker houses here in Amsterdam, and I said, I want to work here. And they took me by surprise. I don't know why, but they took me, and they...
Well, you just walked in and asked.
Yes. Well, at first I had phones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I said, can I talk with you? Because I want to work here. And
you had no experience?
No, not at all. No. But because we were so experienced in making communication and playing roles, all kinds of, and understanding people, how they were. So for me, actually, it was no problem to get a job there.
No.
Because they liked me. And... I could sell myself very well, so to speak. Very much power, because, you know, there were also no problems anymore in my life. Because, I mean, I had all the contacts in my life what I liked. We never went to pubs or to theater or to movies, because always we said we can make our own movies and theater and papers and our own pub. We had a big room in our house on the Keizersgracht. Very big two houses, and we had a dancing room and a music room, and so we made ourselves. We were creative. We said we don't want to watch other people because it's a waste of time.
Yeah,
we in all the time that you watch other people making theater, maybe we don't like them anyway, but it's a waste of time. So we paint ourselves and we make theater and movies and videos. We made a lot of video films. And but suddenly we were brokers, and we had a lot of success. I mean, for us, money didn't exist because it was common property. So I never saw money anyway. But for us, making money was a measure of success, in the sense that we always, and by the end of the week, we had a list who made most of the money.
Yeah.
So sometimes I was number one or two or three. And that's why I knew how much money I earned or made. And it was a lot of money. I mean, we made millions of guilders, I mean, and dollars. I mean, but we didn't do it for that purpose, not at all. It was for us a way of making theater on the phone or in life, where we met the clients. And we made we played a lot of roles. So, first of all, we didn't do it for the money. And... And secondly, we role played. It was not a serious job. It was not a job. We, for us, it was the whole day. So we woke up in the morning sometimes at 5 o'clock, because we were so excited to go to play our theater in the broker houses.
Yeah.
And to call around the world. In Australia, you can call if you when it's 5 o'clock in the morning. Anyway, and so we at sometimes at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, as some people of our group had to pull the plugs of the telephone out of the walls because nobody wanted to stop. It was so funny. So for instance, I remember I was a social scientist and a commune member of commune. Mm. So I couldn't sell, of course, for as a profession, I could not. But suddenly I said, well, now I do today I do something very strange. Although I know a lot, really I knew a lot about the markets and mm-hmm. the economy after a while, of course, mm-hmm. because I studied in New York, and so I had this study. But anyway, I said, you can sell the way you like. So I did a little bit of a showing off, you mm-hmm. know, so you can sell the way you like. So I said, now I'm a boy of 19, and in reality I was maybe 35. And I called somebody and said, hello, I'm George, and I'm allowed to call. My boss says to me, you are allowed to call today to Germany, and you have to buy a share, because the shares go up. My boss says, if you buy today for $10,000, it will 20 by the end of this year. I don't know why he says that, but and I don't understand it myself, but he sometimes gets flowers on his desk from clients, and they have a letter. They say, thank you very much. Now, so, you know, I suddenly discovered a role.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It was a sort of identity for me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I suddenly started to sell millions of dollars. And because I didn't show the clients that I knew so much,
yeah.
They didn't get the competition feeling, so nothing. So for instance, they asked, why should I buy this share? Then I said, oh, look at your watch. It's now 3:30. And you know, because of the difference in time, in half an hour, the exchange, the New York Stock Exchange, will open. So hurry up. So it was not at all a explanation why you should, but they bought. It was, so I, after a while, I knew if I would pick up the phone, I knew who would be on the other line, I would sell. I was 100% sure. Yeah. It was
regardless who was on the other line.
No, yeah, yeah. Because I was so sort of positive, and so I felt so nice and so humorous in this role. But everybody did, like, not like me, but everybody found many roles. So we had so much fun the whole day. So we now and all the other groups in Europe, there were 35 groups, started to do like insurance, to sell insurance and also stocks and whatever. So I think that the accumulated wealth at this moment is now about 70 or 80 million Deutschmark, which is about whatever, $50 million. But no problem. And still this common property, and there is absolutely no purpose to earn the money, because we just enjoy it. And the thing is, if we came home, it was something else. We didn't talk about it anymore. Yeah, sometimes in the weekend we did some sales trainings, and we talked about the markets. But we started to paint, for instance. So we, as soon as we hit home, so to speak, we were in a different world.
Yeah.
Absolutely different. I mean, I left the group now about 1.5 years ago, and I just told you, Willem, I had a feeling I come from jungle. For the first time in my life, I see the city, for instance. And it was almost literally that way. I mean, I didn't touch, I hadn't touched money for about 11 or 12 years. So I looked at money and I didn't know what it was. Although we were actually very rich. But, you know, anyway.
Why did you leave the commune?
I left the commune because after many years, we started to have a lot of children. There are now about only left about 280 adults, but also 250 children born in the commune. So as I was about 36, I started to have very much father feelings. And maybe I have also still two children there. I don't know. We didn't know that exactly. Sometimes the woman knew, yeah, okay. That is the father, the biological father, so to speak. But I don't know, but I think that I have two children. Anyway, I had a very close relationship with those children. And it was fantastic also there. But because of the ideology of the free sexuality, we didn't have the couple relationship. And I felt more and more a need for intimacy, more, yeah, to be closer to some people, not especially one woman or so, but, and that was not so possible, you know, so...
What did the rest of the commune feel about you leaving?
Well, they regretted it, of course. They started to talk with me, and I just had a phone the other day, half a week ago. They started to talk with me and asked to come back. But anyway, I mean, there are many reasons, I suppose, why I left, but maybe I still don't know them. Maybe I came in another phase of my life. I'm still a little bit confused, 1.5 years, but because I don't understand this society anymore. I don't know what it people do here and why they get excited about things and what I'm looking for. And so it was like sometimes I went to dancings or to discos, but just like an anthropologist, so to speak. And so, now I'm going to observe what people do here. Like, or sometimes I think I come from Mars and I visit planet Earth. Yeah. It's still like that. So, we were completely different. But also, I mean, Otto Muhl, he was a fine artist. I mean, he really invented this all. And he was like a guru. He was a very strong figure. And everybody loved him, or did as if they loved him. So everything Otto Muhl did was applauded, and not only, but also literally. I mean, so he painted something and it was applauded, and everybody had to do like him. So, for instance, he went through the whole history of art, from cave paintings up till now. And it was interesting, of course, but he was very fast. So we could come along with him, of course, but so maybe he painted 1 month Egyptian and then he went to the other phase. But you always had to do what he did and what he thought. Mm-hmm. And everything thought something differently, he felt it as a competition. Mm-hmm. So he was the real strong leader. And we were also, and it was also his system to get it together, we had a sort of hierarchy, structure from one, he was number one always, till 600 or later, till 300. So this hierarchy in the whole groups was based on how good you were. That means social responsibility, sexuality, I mean, how horny you were. And sometimes people get a little bit stressed. I go to bed with this woman tonight, but what kind of influence will that have on the hierarchy? So, you know, sometimes you felt a little bit stressed. And and more things like, how could you play with children? You know, everything was judged very, very much. And from the one hand, you can say, okay, it really developed or sort of forced to develop people and to be very active and never sit on your ass and say, okay, now I'm going to be lazy. No, you were very active. I mean, I was really 24 hours a day like a child. Very active, energetic. I mean, the only time I sat quiet was on the toilet. Maybe, but not too long, of course. So we were always in the group, and we were painting, and we were making theater, and self-expression, and we had a lot of sexuality. I mean, in the beginning of the group, say in the 70s, beginning 80s, well, 5 or 6 times a day with different people, it was very normal, because later we were brokers. But sometimes we went, of course, for lunch from the company to home, and we had lunch and one fuck. And it was very good. I mean, yeah. We came back to the company, and always the what we call the external people, they felt we were so loose and so flexible and so, I mean, you see it really in the body if you can express yourself and do everything you like.
Yeah.
Although we were very structured, you know, and
disciplined.
Yeah. I mean, it was very clean in our house. I mean, everything was organized. We had cooks, housekeepers to clean, and a telephone operator to get the calls, to answer the calls. Everything was very much, after years, disciplined and organized. And I mean, we are dressing very nice suits, but not rich. I mean, we didn't have Mercedes or whatever, no, or BMWs, no, Volkswagen and small car, and very only the beds were very strong, because we discovered that this society doesn't make beds for so much and nice sexuality, not at all. Our beds, we bought them in the beginning, or made them. No, if we had bought them, they fell apart after a year. So we made our own sexual friendly beds and things like that. But well, so it was very, very modest in our house, and so we didn't spend much money, and we earned so much money. So that's why we became also so wealthy. But another time, I didn't know that. I mean, I didn't care. So, yes, I mean, I heard about some form of sexuality these days now, and it's called Tantra sexuality. So I bought a book about it. So I thought, I mean, I think I know everything about sexuality, of course, but maybe there's something else. And they have a lot of exercises, and some are nice. And didn't know, but of course I was very curious. What is the last exercise in the book after 600 pages? And it was the ultimate exercise, where you have about 3 or 6 hours, whatever you like, sort of ongoing orgasm, and sort of you're open to the cosmos and everything. It is a sort of meditation also. And for instance, it was described like, you don't know, you have male or female body. I mean, you don't know whether you have a prick or a cunt or anything. And that's so in this Tantra yoga sexuality exercise described. But things like that I discovered in the commune also.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was not only, a lot of fucking and as much as you could. But it was also sometimes very high, sort of high experiences.
Yeah.
What I discover now that people describe and write about in books, and where you have to do a lot of exercise for, it came to us just like normal, so to speak.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
A lot of people tell me also, how could you stand that to say, have sexuality 5 times a day? Wasn't it exhausting? Not at all. I didn't sleep much, not because of the sexuality, but because I didn't need so much sleep. Maybe 4 or 5 hours, and I, you know, so we had so much energy, and there didn't exist also either jealousy. Now again, I'm sort of jealous sometimes. If I have this exclusive relationships in this society, I don't know. Sometimes I'm jealous, but there I haven't been jealous at all, because so also it was one of the features was that if somebody left you, so to speak, the commune, you didn't feel this existential. Sometimes you feel such existential feelings like, oh, somebody leaves me and now I'm alone.
No,
never. I mean, they left, of course, a lot of people after a while because they didn't like it anymore. But we felt, you felt so secure, like a womb. I mean, like a fetus in a womb, you felt.
Yeah.
I mean, everything was done for you. And it was one big family. And, I don't know. It's... So in this society, everything is sort of in my opinion, split up. I mean, for your sex, you have to really search and look for and go to. And for your whatever self-expression, you have to go to courses and to clubs and you have to go to the pubs and to the restaurants and to.
Is it not another kind of role? Is that not another kind of role?
This.
No, the way that society, the way that you're describing that society works.
What do you mean by role?
It's a role. Well, all those things that you have to do, or that you are so-called have to do, are. Yeah, is another kind of role or not?
Oh yes, I mean now after a while being very confused, I start to learn more and more again about this society and yes, maybe it's. I mean I enjoy it also. I mean to be in a pub, but still I see it more as a theater than about 15 years ago.
Yeah,
for me that was real. I mean a pub. And the people, the conversations, it was real, you know? But now I see it still with a sort of one point in my mind always knows that this is not real. This is also theater.
Yeah.
And all the people play roles. But they, most of them, I think now, most of the roles are very fixed, very stiff.
Yeah.
People don't come out of their roles anymore. They. I don't know why, but sometimes you get a role in your life as a child, maybe, or you see your father or mother or whoever as a model, a role model, literally, and then you do the same.
You become the role.
You become the role, and you don't know anymore that you're playing roles. But because, like, now sometimes I still sell, and I met again Willem, and. Of course, Willem has a certain voice and sort of way of to express himself. And I started, oh, okay, now I can copy his role. Let's try this. Willem. Yeah. I sell now as Willem. And it goes very well. And the nice thing about if you consciously pick up a role, you don't have to think, oh, what kind of word says Willem.
Yeah.
No, it comes naturally then. Yeah. All the way... the way how he expresses himself, it's naturally. It's you don't have to think about it. Mm. So, you know, and I was very interested in this society to travel, to go to the States, for instance, or to Germany or to Switzerland or whatever, because we didn't travel. We said, well, we make our own vacation. So we bought a very big property in on the Canary Islands. So we made our own holiday resort or place. So, yeah.
I have to go.
Yeah.
See you later. Leave your address here.
Yes.
Okay. I'll see you later.
Hey, see you later.
Now, I wanted to ask you about, so there were, children were actually born there in the commune. Within the commune.
Yes.
Lots,
yeah.
And so there are lots of children who have never actually been in the quote unquote outside world. So what is it like for them? Because it was, I mean, as far as you can describe it.
Well, after a while, of course, if they grew older, the children, no, of course, they sometimes went to society.
Mm-hmm.
So they went, for instance, to Vienna and saw whatever they saw. Mm-hmm. And they said, well, we want to go more and more to this society to enjoy the circus, for instance, or the movie theater or discos. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. We thought in the beginning they won't do that.
Mm-hmm.
They will enjoy so much the commune that they won't be attracted by things like that. But that isn't true. They really were very much attracted by also still things like that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were very closed maybe up till 1985.
Mm-hmm.
Although we worked in society, but still we were very closed and we didn't like society anyway. But now, it's now 1990, there's more integration. The children go on holidays maybe to other countries and go on skiing or whatever, or go to a movie theater or to the discos. But one problem was always that the sexual diseases, of course. Yeah. We were very strict in that. We were a closed group, so to speak. We never had any sexuality outside. Mm-hmm. We never even kissed people, because we were a bit afraid for those diseases, mm-hmm. and VD and so on. Mm-hmm. But so that was a problem for the integration also. But also we wanted to build a whole new society and culture, you know, a whole new way of living. And I don't think we succeeded in that too much, because in my opinion now, if you are against something very, very much, still you will be affected by it. And we came, of course, also from this society. So we had it in our body, so to speak, and mind. So
it's like if you're against something, you're actually for it.
Yes.
The more you're putting more and more energy into something you don't want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you're making it bigger.
Yeah. And also, I mean, from their point of view, or his point of view of Otto Muhl, he wanted to sort of introduce the sane of healthy sexuality to the children. So he had also sexuality with the children as they were maybe 12, and that society doesn't accept that. And have a lot of opinions about that. But from their point of view, I can imagine if you think you are a healthy culture and society, and you are the healthiest one, because he thought he was the healthiest one, he was the model in the commune, that he also wanted to introduce sexuality, like maybe in tribes or whatever is possible. But this society doesn't accept that. So some teenagers left the group and they told, so to speak, the judge or the police, look, Otto Muhl had sex with us as we were 12 or 11 or 13. So now it's a little bit difficult. it's very difficult to build an island in this society. Mm. I mean,
I was going to ask you about that before, because is that the first problems that you had with the authorities, with the outside society?
Yeah.
That was the first ones. Because I can imagine somebody setting up a great big commune next to Vienna is going to attract a lot of attention.
We were very clever. Mm. We were very diplomatic. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, as we were becoming wealthier, we gave a lot of presents and we gave a lot of away. Mm-hmm. We gave a kindergarten or a playground to the next village. We had very good contacts with politicians. In the 60s, as Otto Muhl was having his Wiener Aktionismus with all the blood and everything and the killing pigs and very weird art, so to speak. The foreign minister said once, I'm ashamed to be an Austrian. Yeah? But now, 2 years ago, the minister of Austria opened an exhibition of Otto Muhl, of that art of those times. You know, so you know how it went with Van Gogh, and it's the same in Austria. So. We had a lot of, even with very high people in the government in Austria. Mm-hmm. So we gave a lot of money away and presents and good contacts. Mm-hmm. So we have even had our own school, recognized by society, private school, and our own teachers and so. So no, there were not many problems. Only incest is a bit too far. Yeah. We went too far there, or he went too far there, because he was actually the only guy who introduced sexuality to children. Yeah. And So now there is starting a process, a court case.
A trial
against him. And so now they... And also a lot of people left the group with a sort of resentment, a sort of hate feelings, because he was such a dominant person and he had to press really his opinion and his way of thinking to us, you know. Mm-hmm. So we had to think too much like him. So a lot of people had sort of resentment, sort of hate feelings. And so also they used, so to speak, this possibility of a trial against him as a way to express their hate feelings, I suppose. And also, it was very difficult for me, for instance, as I left the group, we had common property. Mm. And suddenly I had nothing, only my clothes. Mm. I had no home, no friends anymore, of course, because we were a very close group. Yeah. So I didn't have friends anymore in Holland. So I really, literally started with zero, only, so to speak, my body and the clothes I had on.
Yeah.
So I also had to negotiate. Look, I've worked so much there, so can I have a little bit of money? And didn't want to give me.
Ooh, ooh, ooh. Wow.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, George just nailed that one.
Gripping.
High pass, George.
High pass.
High
indeed,
pass
yeah.
there.
High pass. Fully.
Yeah. Very high pass. Nice job. Steve, I've got to ask you. I mean, I was getting goosebumps during that whole thing. But could you imagine having sex with all of those people?
You know, no. For a while, I even wasn't even convinced he was talking about having sex, because they were always having sexuality with people. You know, they would have this kind or that kind of sexuality, but they weren't, it didn't, you know, I guess I just didn't connect it to having sex per se. Only really when he was talking about Otto Mühl having sexuality with 12-year-olds did I come to realize what he was probably referring to.
Yeah.
I don't know.
They must have something in the water over there.
Oh, there's something in the water
that
for sure.
Europe place. I struggle with that sort of thing.
You know, not to make this too personal, but myself, I've been unable to sustain an erection since we stopped hanging out with Levon. You know, Levon, I don't know whether it was the drugs or what, but things were just so different when we were hanging out with that guy. Since then, you know, the love boat's been in dry dock, so to speak.
Yeah. I can't imagine an artist community in here in Los Angeles like that, although I imagine at some time, probably in the 1960s, there were people doing that kind of thing. Do you know anything about that, Steve?
Well, as far as I know, the people who did that kind of thing, like the Source family and stuff, it was all a little more mystical than creative. I think maybe the closest we got to someone like Otto Mühl in California was Charles Manson, and that was really something quite different. None of them, you know, became successful stockbrokers as theater or anything like that. So, yeah, it seems unique. It seems like a uniquely European production.
Yeah. Well, that was a different time.
You can say that again.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks.
For joining us here on The Talking Show on K-Chung Radio. This is Nicholas Miller signing off. Good night.
See you later.